This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Made in Melbourne for the world. Joy 94.9.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast. I've been around the world.
Detours, Vince and Jody.
It's a great Saturday here in Melbourne, Australia. Of course, Joy Melbourne, the largest gay and lesbian radio station in Australia, broadcasting live on www.joy.org.au.
In fact, we're the only gay and lesbian station that's 24 hours in the country,
aren't
we?
Yeah, that's right.
There is, a program in Perth, and there's some programming in Sydney. And, it's fantastic. And you know what even makes it more fun being here on Saturday? It's following Nick and the team on Saturday Magazine. They're every Saturday at 10 o'clock.
They are, and it's a fabulous show. I always listen to it on my way in a desperate hope to find some material for our show.
We don't need material. We've got luscious ladies here who are going to talk all things film, queer and otherwise.
We do have two luscious ladies joining us here today in the Detours hot seat. And before we come to them, we've got a full packed show. We don't say cheerios, but we'll say cheerio to Macca, and we'll give him a call a bit later. He's preparing for Grand Prix weekend next weekend. And if you're thinking of coming to around Australia and dropping into Melbourne, probably next weekend's either a good reason to get totally out of Melbourne.
Or if you're into car racing,
come and be here. So there's something for everyone. So next weekend, where else could they go, Jody, around Victoria and Lynn's, apart from Melbourne? If you're not into car racing, where would you head off to?
I think I would go to the Dandenongs and go and find some afternoon tea and go for a walk in the Sherbrooke Forest. Something very low-key, very easy.
That's nice.
But fresh air. And then go antique shopping.
Oh, I like that. See, I'd probably do something very similar because living in Trentham as I am at the moment, I believe that the Trentham Market is on next weekend and the Farmers Market. And Daylesford, there's something on at Daylesford too next weekend, I believe, but also the fabulous antique fair that's in Daylesford is just heaven. So I'd be doing that far, far away.
There's some great options.
And what would you be doing, Greg?
Well, this year in Melbourne, I actually might go to the Grand Prix. Ever since it started, I've been boycotting the thing, and it's harassed me with that noise. That constant. I think I'll go this year. I think I might actually stick my head in and have a look.
Mm.
Yeah, for maybe a half a day.
And, of course, tonight is the Victorian Multicultural Commission's Gala Ball. And I'm going along, and I'm looking forward to it because it'll be a night of entertainment and dancing, and there's more than Bollywood to international and multicultural, but I love Bollywood, so I'm hoping to get some more moves in my repertoire.
Fashionista time. What are you wearing at
the
Gala
Ball? I was going to ask that, like the pretty good ball gown. Are they still in vogue?
Oh, no, I feel under the pressure now. I've been moving house, and all my glamour outfits are in storage right up the back somewhere safe and up high, so I'm going to have to be creative, I think.
So, Lady Gaga moment with a egg carton tuned.
A nice headpiece.
Lots of blue eyeshadow. Fabulous.
We'll report back next week.
Yeah.
We will. But joining us now, we have one-time Detours presenter, Lisa Daniel.
Retiree. Kick myself off, really.
And I'll get Lisa to introduce our guest, because Lisa's here in a different role. She's the director of the 20th Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
I am.
Probably the second oldest queer film festival in the world.
No, not the second. It's pretty old in terms of, it's probably up there in the top seven or eight, I suppose. But certainly the oldest in Australia and the biggest in Australia and the best in Australia, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
So you're here today and you're bringing someone special with you. So
yes, we've got a New York City filmmaker, Desi Del Valle, who is here this morning, and she's well travelled as well, but she's got a film in the program called Back to Life, which screened on Friday night. Was it Thursday night? Thursday night. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Monday.
It was the first screening of the festival.
It was the very first session of the festival, mm-hmm. and it's screening again next weekend. So welcome, Desi.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here.
Today we're going to unpack not just your film experiences, we're going to unpack, Desi, some of your travel experiences around how you make your film and where you've been. And how did you come to pick Melbourne to screen your film? I mean, that's a question we'll get to a little bit later. And apart from that, later on, much later on, we're also going to unpack some of Lisa's fabulous journeys, who I think you earlier this year went to the Inca Trail.
Just late last year, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, survived. One of the people who get down there without going down a mud slip. Yeah. So we'll come back and talk to these two brilliant women very shortly. You're here on Detours with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg, and we'll be right back.
Well, wasn't that fabulous, folks? That was Nelly featuring Taylor Swift, mixed by our resident DJ, Gregles Adkins. Yeah, I apologise for that. I chose that. I thought Nelly actually sang nice romantic travel music, but apparently not. And if we can dedicate those two to Taz and Ian, I believe Ian was the one for Nelly because he likes to get down and get dirty. And I've seen it. You're listening to Joy 94.9, the only station you really should be listening to. And here's the mic.
We're sharing a mic. And, of course, it's Jodie and Greg and Lindsay with you right up until 1 o'clock today. Now, if you would like to email us or give us an SMS with some questions, queries, suggestions, or just to tell us how fabulous we are, you can do that on 0427JOY949, or you can phone us, and we've got Heath ready to take your call, on 1300JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
This is Detours with Lindsay, Jodie and Greg. And our guest today is Lisa and Desi. Now, Desi, you've travelled a long way from New York City to beautiful Melbourne. A bit like New York. Almost a bit like New York.
A bit more like San Francisco, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Especially the main roads that the trams travel on. We don't have trams in New York City.
Well, you're missing something there. There's something you can ride your bike down the street and catch it in the wheel and go over if you want to here in Melbourne.
I've done that. I used to live in San Francisco. I've done that.
So coming to Melbourne, this isn't your first trip to Melbourne.
Yes, it is.
It is your
very
first.
Very first. Mm-hmm.
But, well, then, through fresh eyes, what's the most exciting part about here in Melbourne from your first couple of days here?
Well, one of the things I've tried to do while being here is be a little less shy about talking to strangers and asking questions. And what I like about Melbourne people is they will answer your questions. They're very friendly. They're very helpful. But they don't get sort of overly involved. So that's really nice. So then they don't start asking me a bunch of questions and following me around and offering to, you know, take me out to dinner and things like that, because that's a bit weird. So just
we have
enough
a non-stalker policy in Melbourne.
Exactly, non-stalkers. That's good.
That's pretty good. And you're here with a specific purpose. You're here to go to the screening of your film.
Yes.
That's screening,
which I have done already. There was a screening
it's already
Thursday.
Finished. So if people want to see it, they can't see it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. No, Saturday. This coming Saturday.
It's twice.
Ah, yeah, excellent.
Comes back.
So what day? This Saturday, today?
Oh, God.
Or next Saturday?
No, it's next Saturday. Let me have a look.
So it's the 27th. What time is at the Queer Film Festival?
Keep talking. 2:30. 2:30 next Saturday.
Right. It comes back to life. Oh, that's the title.
And that's screening just after. Is that screening after or in a different cinema to the violence screening?
Yeah, at the same time, actually. Yeah.
Same time.
Yeah, so you won't be there.
I won't be there, Desi, but it was nice knowing you.
Nice to meet you as well.
So, Desi, how did you get into filmmaking and then what is your film about?
Okay. I got into filmmaking. I'm an actor, so I thought, well, I'll make some films and I can act in them and I don't have to audition. My film, Back to Life, is a story of grief. It's two best friends, one straight, one lesbian, who sleep together and then they sort things out the morning after. So that's the main plot. But there are a lot of themes that run throughout about grief and loss and friendship and love.
And when you develop a film, have a concept for a film, and you work up a script for a film, how much of it is reality based on personal experience and people you know? And then at what point do you start taking it away from living people to somewhere where it explores the concept more fully. How do you get that balance?
That's exactly what I do. I take real life circumstances and then I embellish or magnify to try to make it more cinematic, more interesting, something people would want to sit through for 12 minutes.
And it's a tough call. Is it organic? Does that fall in your lap straight away on how to do it? Or is it something that you actually have to have the failures and work through what doesn't work before you get a winning script?
For me, I think it's easy because I've seen a lot of film. I come from a distribution background. I was a distributor for 14, 15 years. So I've seen my fair share of movies, and I was a movie buff before that, and I studied a little bit of cinema in school. So if you just watch enough films and you get a taste for it, you have your own preferences, you have your own eye for it, and you're honest about what people want to sit through, it's not that hard to make an interesting film, I think.
And if I could follow that, one more question. Does that, your experience of travel, does that sometimes bring interesting characters into your potential film scripts that you wouldn't see at home? So are you like a sponge, Desi, travelling around and soaking up these experiences of meeting new people and incorporating that in what you do?
Sure, abroad, but even in my own home of New York City, where there are many characters, there's lots of good people watching and very many interesting people and people who are both native and come from all over the world to be in New York. So there's a lot of eye candy and a lot of influence there, a lot of inspiration right in my own home, which is why I live in a place like New York City. As far as travel and this particular film, I live in New York City, but I made it in California because I used to live there, and I have quite a bit of I have some resources there and friends who are willing to help out. So it was a bi-coastal production. And then I used the screenings of the film to be able to travel. So I made a rule, with the exception of San Francisco and Los Angeles, that I wouldn't go to cities that I've already been to. I'd only go to new places. So here I am in Melbourne for the first time screening my film. So it's just a tool to travel, basically.
Yeah, Jodie and Lindsay, it's a pretty gutsy effort, don't you think? Pretty raw filmmaking, putting your experiences out there. That's sort of imitating life in a bit. Some of our lives are about collecting experiences, and we collect them, but we don't do anything with it.
And I think that's the whole thing about an artist, basically, Greg, in any medium, is that, you know, they do, you know, writers, filmmakers, painters, they take their life experiences and, you know, mush them around a bit, meld other experiences with that, and come up with fabulous movies, paintings and what have you. And I think that for anybody in the creative field, you know, like yourself, to have a vehicle that you enjoy, obviously, making films and be able to travel at with that, which is also something you enjoy, is absolutely brilliant. And I think it's probably gets a little bit tough at times, but then you think, hey, I'm doing something that I love.
It can be very challenging. I think filmmaking is one of the hardest things you can do as an artist, because you have to synchronize so much. It's collaborative, so you need to know how to work with people, and you need to know how to communicate your vision in order for the various people who work on a film to be able to do their job successfully. Exactly. So you have to be a leader as well.
Exactly. And also, did you lose any friends when you said before that you called on contacts that you had in California? Did any sort of say, no, I'm not doing this anymore?
Well, I was surprised. There was someone I was dating, and she was very unhelpful to my surprise, and maybe that's why we're not dating anymore. No. I sort of said, oh, can I use your shoes for the backdrop, you know, just for atmosphere? Well, I need you to sign something that says you'll return them or pay for them if they get lost or damaged. Wow. I mean, little things like that. I've had, you know, I had a number of people flake on me, you know, sort of say, oh, yeah, I'll help you out, and then sort of not show up.
My only experience of filmmaking was recently with Traveller's Aid, where we decided to produce a DVD for 10 minutes about overview of our services. Actually, it's not 10 minutes, less than that. And we used Grit Media, which is another organisation within City Village here at 225 Bourke Street. And they're a disability media organisation. Fantastic. And of course, our staff and volleys thought it was fantastic to actually do the storyboarding themselves and, you know, what sort of costumes and outfits. And then, of course, they were looking for talent, and you know, nobody could escape. We had a young international student who's in our finance department, and she looked young enough to pass as about 15, so she was in a school uniform, and you know, but that was a sort of completely new experience about trying to take what it is you do in real life and then trying to put it in a story and try and I really admire you. I think it's a really, really great talent.
Which is why I don't make films. Because I get asked that every day, like especially at the moment, people say, well, when are you going to make a film? I actually made a film, a couple of little short films when I was at university, but, you know, that never see the light of day. But, you know, it's just really hard. It's too hard. I'm too lazy. It's just, you know, it's just not my thing.
Lisa, what is it about Desi's film that grabbed your attention? And I mean, you must get thousands of films wanting to screen at the queer
film.
Yeah,
we get
what
about...
grabbed your attention?
Yeah, we get about 450 submissions. We only screen about 140, and we try to take the quality over the quantity, and it's, you know, Desi's film is just a really, it's a tightly constructed and well-written and well-acted story. And look, you know, to be honest, with lesbian film, there is a lot of bad lesbian film around, and that's why you're never going to get, well, probably not in the next 10 years, you're never going to get 50-50 parity between the gender split in queer film festivals. You could probably do that if you put a lot of rubbish in, but, you know, I think that's, you know, you don't want to be charging audience members money to go and see stuff that's substandard. So, and it's just an unfortunate look. It's just a reflection of patriarchal society, really. That, you know, the men have the money and the women don't so much have the money. It's not to say that there's not incredibly talented lesbian filmmakers and lesbian stories out there. They just don't really have access to the resources, and it's really hard to stay in the industry, as Desi would know. I mean, we have a lot of people here that make one film and one film only, and they make a great first film, and then they have to go and, you know, they have to work for a living.
Well, the lesbian filmmaker is a group within a group. It's a marginalised group within a marginalised group.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it's tough for a lot of reasons. So, you know, Desi's film really fit the bill, and you know, it sits nicely in a package. And we actually only screen, there's probably only about 20 lesbian shorts in the festival. So, and we do see a lot. And so, you know, it's a good festival to get into. It's a good launching pad from this end of the world.
Now, as a short film, Desi, a short film, people think, oh, well, it's only 15 minutes or it's not as big as a feature. But there's some challenges you have with short films that people don't have with features.
Such as?
Well, you've got a small... Desi, as an avid film goer, and I love lesbian film, lesbian film
Do
is
you?
Actually quite extraordinary.
No.
It is quite extraordinary.
Are you saying that because there's four lesbians in front of you?
No, there's definitely no fear factor this time. None at all. Now, I'm very comfortable with lesbian film because it seems to have a narrative to it that a lot of gay men's film doesn't get. Mm. I mean, I'm just so over as a gay man going to see something that's got bums and balls and
willies.
It's all about porn. I mean, that's not to me about film. I like to have something that has a bit of depth.
Oh, so now, you won't love my film because it opens with a hot sex scene.
No, hot sex scenes between women are just hot sex scenes. They're fabulous. But when you're connected in a script in a short film, you've got to start. You've got to get somewhere. You've got to capture the audience. You actually have to deliver the whole package in a very small amount of time. Right. Otherwise, people are going to stand up and walk out after the first couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. How do you face that as a short film producer?
Well, I prefer it actually, and I prefer things that are more manageable. And to me, making a short film is much more manageable. It's kind of like poetry. You compact a lot of ideas and a lot of imagery into a short amount of space. And so that's very much how I work. I have a minimalist aesthetic. My film takes place in really three settings, but one main setting. It's 12 minutes, about 8 minutes of it takes place in the bedroom. It's just two women talking. So it's very simple. But what's important, what's critical that I do with that is I make that conversation interesting. I make it complex. I left a lot of things ambiguous so that people could fill in their own gaps. And that's very interesting because everybody brings their own story to my story.
Yeah, and I suppose then casting, having people that then can work with your style of direction.
Sure, well, it was easy because one of my cast members is me.
So. Oh, yeah, there it goes. We actually get to see you on film as well.
Yes, you do. In the flesh, literally in the flesh.
Wow, Desi, I'm blushing over this.
So am I.
I have to bring my mum to see it.
The trap that Desi doesn't fall into as a filmmaker is the trap that many, many, many filmmakers fall into, and having taught film before, is that they don't realise that film is a medium where you don't actually have to use a lot of dialogue. You can show a lot of stuff very, very quickly and concisely without having to explain it verbally. And whenever filmmakers come to me for advice, and they do a lot, is my first word is editing. Like, you know, put a lot of money into editing because, you know, you can say things very, very quickly. You can say things in 3 minutes. You can, you know, have a look at advertising. You know, I say watch ads on TV. And look at how they tell a story without hardly any dialogue, and they tell it in 20 seconds. And you get a whole world in advertising. So I often tell filmmakers when I was teaching film to look at ads, look how ads work, and you know, sort of build up from there. And, you know, anything over 10, 15 minutes, you must be kind of... It must be too complex a story for a short or something. So, yeah, editing is the key.
And how much of the cost is the editing side? I mean, you're the director, you have people that assist with lighting, you've got the other actor or actors that act with you. How much quality goes into editing? How do you pick the people to edit? And do you have a hand in that, or is that a standoff moment when you let someone else do their creative talents?
It's kind of a good news, bad news story. I mean, the good news was that we did the film for very little money, and that was due in large part to my co-producer and co-director, Holly Lamar. So Holly Lamar had all this equipment and wanted to make a film but didn't really have a story or an idea. I had a story and an idea and almost no technical knowledge. So Holly was willing to bring her technical expertise or skills into it, and I had a story and could act and could direct, so I took care of that side of it. She also edited. So the good news, bad news is that we still have a lot to learn. We're still amateur filmmakers, but we managed to keep our costs very low and put out a product, because sometimes you can be very talented but not have the resources to fulfill your vision.
Well, we look forward, don't we? And we'll come back a bit more and talk more with Desi. You're here on Detours with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg, and we're talking to Desi and the director of the Queer Film Festival, Lisa Daniel. And that's Claire Rochelle with that's called Claire Rochelle by Tinuarian. And that's a beautiful bit of music that Lindsay's provided today. Music by Lindsay.
I had to redeem myself after Nelly, I believe.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had some random Christmas carols that we just picked up. I think we need to focus a little more on our music choices. You're listening to Joy Melbourne 94.9 on the Detours Travel Show with Jodie, Greg and Lindsay. And we're delighted that we have in the studio today Lisa Daniel, who's the director of the Melbourne International Queer Film Festival, and Desi, who has a short film, a 12-minute film. She's from the US, called Back to Life. So you've lived in the West Coast and the East Coast, Desi, of the US. Where did you start? Where did you end up?
Born and raised in the Bronx, New York. And I like saying that because, you know, we get a bad rap, and I like to remind people that we're human beings and lovely people. Al Pacino comes from the Bronx. Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
Ralph Lauren.
Yeah.
Ralph Lauren. Mr. Lipschitz himself. Yeah. That's his real name. So, and me. And J-Lo.
So I have to ask, because I haven't been to New York yet. Mm-hmm. And I know when I go there, I probably will never, ever return back here.
Mm.
I just have this thing about New York. Mm-hmm. But New York is sort of... it's almost like the art capital of the world now. Like, there's so many galleries. I've heard there's galleries everywhere, and I have friends that actually travel just to look at galleries. Mm. With a film like your own, was it easy to get funding? Did you try and get funding, or did you just pass around a hat amongst your friends and say, hey, help me out?
Mm. Funding was very easy. It came from my checking account. Yeah. No, I didn't request any funding for this film whatsoever, or not even any donations. This film was a gift to my friend Andrew. He's the last credit in the film. And Andrew lost his partner, John, of 18 years. I now live with Andrew. I moved in with him when John passed and when my own girlfriend broke up with me. So both of us were going through a great deal of grief, and we supported each other. Andrew is very wealthy, so he's the man that you can't really buy anything for, because he has everything. So I thought, well, I'll make him something. Wow. So I made him Back to Life.
That's very special.
That's awesome. It is very, really,
very
special.
And to live with him, to start to spend time with your friend, did you have to move as well to a different part of the States? Or was it in the same city?
Oh, no. We both live in New York City. I was living in Brooklyn, New York, and he lives in Manhattan. And now I live in Manhattan. Now I'm a Manhattan resident.
Do you travel together?
We have done. We've traveled actually with the film together. We traveled to San Francisco and Los Angeles and Durham, North Carolina with the film. So, and he's sorry he can't be here in Melbourne, but he's a professional bridge player, so he's on a bridge tournament.
You know, a lot of us as Australians do go to New York, have been there if we travel. We have been to California.
Mm-hmm.
What's North Carolina like? What's Durham, North Carolina like in comparison with those two other cities when you travel there?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a college town, so you get your fair share of people from all over the place, all over the world, in fact. When I was there, it was a bit dead. It was August, so school was not in session. So, but it's very fun there. I'm quite an outdoorsy person, despite being from a big city. So I did a lot of cycling and walking around. It's very hot. And because it's a university town and you have a lot of colleges in the area, it's more intellectual than some might think. There's a tendency to make fun of the South and people from the South, but there's a lot of good and interesting things going on there.
Now, that's your U.S. travel. You see, mm-hmm. you're a New York person. Mm-hmm. You've traveled to across to the East, and you've gone to the northern parts of the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
outside U.S., where have you traveled? What are your travel
destinations? Oh, well, ask me how I got to Australia.
Well, is there a bit of story
There's
here?
A little bit of a story.
A little bit of island hopping.
I got here by way of Bali.
By Bali?
Yeah. When I knew I was coming to this part of the globe, I have a friend who lives in Bogor, which is an hour away from Jakarta. And I said, I'll visit you in Bogor. And he said, Bogor, not so much. Let's go to Bali and have a vacation. So before coming here, I spent 5 days in Bali.
Now, that's an eye-opener. That's certainly not Melbourne.
No, it's very different and very pleasant. I had a really good time.
Well, for fresh eyes at Bali, how was it?
Great. This could be a plus or minus depending on who you are, but I had no idea that there was a Hindu festival happening, or holiday, I should say. And so the night before last, there's a festival that people process through the street with, what do you call those things, effigies, and it's supposed to sort of extract the demons, and it's sort of a day of like forgiveness and cleansing and such. And then the following day, which is the day before I came here, it's a mandatory 24-hour day of silence. So you don't leave the home, you don't cook, you don't work, you don't have any lights on, you don't have anything electronic or modern happening. And when I heard about that, I thought, is it too late to change my ticket? But then it actually turned out to be a really good thing, because if you live in urban areas, it's seldom that you have any quiet. And if you're a busy person, it's seldom that you ever slow down. In fact, I don't get enough sleep. So this was a nice way to just relax.
Mandatorily relax,
yes.
But I think, Lisa, given that you're in the midst of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, you might have some other priorities, I'm sure.
It is
going to
happen. It is Earth Hour next Saturday night, actually. So we do have to be quiet for an hour during the middle of the festival. So we turn all the lights down in the festival club, but we still have the projectors going. That's about it. So that's as close to quiet as I'm going to get in the next couple of weeks.
Earth Hour. It's very good. And after here, leaving Australia, you're not going straight back to, into the States and across to New York. What are you doing? You're going to have a break?
Well, first I'm going to Sydney for 5 days. I've never been. Never been to Australia, period.
Increase your insurance. If you go to Sydney, you've got to have a higher insurance.
Remember, I live in New York City, so I'm probably prepared. And then I'm going back home. I was meant to go to India after this for 2 weeks. And when I got to Bali, something just hit me and said, not the right time. It's probably not a good idea to go to India after you've just been to Indonesia and Australia. It might be a bit much. And actually, yesterday I had dinner with some Indians, and they told me that was probably the right decision.
I have to support you on that. I mean, I've been to India recently for the first time, and my partner's Indian, and I was just so overwhelmed by the colour, the noise, the smells, the sights, the heat, the chaos.
You can say it, chaos.
It was absolute chaos. And you know, I spoke on our program afterwards about using an e-ticket, which of course is electronic ticket, but in India they wanted the printout. And I'm saying, but it's electronic, it's e, I don't need to print. But it was amazing. But I think if you're feeling zen and you need to sort of get back feeling rested, then that's a wise move.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to New York, the hustle and bustle of New York.
At least familiar hustle and bustle.
Yeah, well, talking film, I went to the opening of the Indian Film Festival here in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago at Cinema Nova, and I was fortunate to be at the screening with Rani Mukherjee, who is the queen of Bollywood. Mm. Now, I can't for the life of me, and someone will SMS it, no doubt. It's something. Dupla is the end part, but it's basically a film that's for 3 hours, of course, because it's a Bollywood film, not like your 12-minute Back to Life on the Queer Film Festival, about a young girl, a woman who is desperate to play cricket, and so she dresses up as a guy.
Yeah, great.
And it was very, very interesting. It was a great film, and obviously, fabulous music, but we're very lucky in Melbourne to have so many film festivals.
Yeah, it's film festival capital of the world, I think. There's always something going on film. Because straight after this is the La Mirada, which is the Spanish film festival. Before that, French film festival's on now, I think, as well. So it's just, film festivals all the time.
Now, you're listening to Detours, and Desi's been unpacking some of her travels around her experience of coming here with her 12-minute film to the Queer Film Festival. After this, I think we'll come to Lisa Daniel and some of her extraordinary experiences. Lisa actually went to the Inca Trail in South America, and she came back in one piece, which is quite unlike many other people that have done that recently. You're in Detours with Jody, Lindsay and Craig.
Lady weeping at the crossroads.
Just out? Tune in. Joy 94.9.
And you're here on Detours with Jody, Lindsay and Greg. And that song was especially for one short little president of France. It's his lover and wife, Carla Bruni, singing Lady Weeping at the Crossroads. We do like
that. It's almost religious, isn't it?
We do. I mean, I do admire her for managing to get such a small head of state as a partner. He's such a short man.
Aren't they breaking up? Isn't there some...
I think that's all rumours.
Right.
Is it rumours?
Probably. Well, you know, Brad and Ange had broken up and they're still together.
Things happen in threes.
Now, that voice was Lisa Daniel. Lisa Daniel and Desi. Desi's a producer who has a film screening next Saturday at the Queer Film Festival. Lisa Daniels is actually the poo bar of that, the director
the grand poo bar, yes.
Of the film festival.
So it says that on my badge right here.
In case you get lost in the street.
Yeah, that's right. I get
so, Lisa, you obviously have a huge workload in terms of, you know, viewing films and then going to other festivals to see what's happening around the world. And, of course, that's not all about leisure and pleasure. You're working. But
apparently a part-time job, but...
Yeah, allegedly, yeah. So the Inca Trail, what made you decide to go there?
Look, to be honest, it wasn't really high on my list of... I do have a travel list and I have a thing that each year I try and do a beach holiday and like a relaxing beach holiday and a trip, like a tour that might be a bit more challenging or a bit, you know, kind of more difficult and a bit more, you know, kind of out there and just not lying around reading books. And so the first thing I did last year was for my partner's 50th, we went to the Ningaloo Reef, and that was our kind of relaxing thing. We swam with whale sharks, which was fantastic, and, you know, we did a bit of driving, and we you know, it was reasonably relaxing but fun. Then a friend contacted me sort of earlier in the year and said, you know, she wanted to go to South America and go to the Inca Trail. And I was like, it was kind of on my list but kind of way down. And because she was organising it and we're going with World Expeditions, I said, yep, let's go. So Claire, my partner, and I signed on for that. And there was eight of us from all over the world, really. There was a couple of expat Australians living in London. We met up with them, a couple of Sydney-siders, a couple of Melbourne people. And we all met up in Buenos Aires and we stayed there for about a week. And then we flew to Lima for a night, and then we flew to Cusco, and then in Cusco you basically acclimatise to the altitude, and then you get driven down to the trailhead and you hike for 5 or 6 days through the Inca Trail, and you end up at Aguas Calientes at the end and at Machu Picchu.
When you say altitude, how tall is it?
It's about 5,500 metres, I think, in the air. So it's not that high in terms of things like Everest and Everest Base Camp and that sort of stuff, but you do feel it. You really feel it, like, you know. I'm reasonably a fit person. I do a fair bit of running and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I did kind of feel it when we got to Cusco, that you're sort of breathless and, you know, you sort of walk up the street and think, oh, wow, you know, I feel like an 80-year-old woman. And I actually got altitude sickness in Cusco. I got a crashing headache that lasted for about 12 hours that no amount of drugs would move. And that kind of passed. And there was a concern that myself and someone else who got altitude sickness the next night may not be able to do the trail because, you know, we're only about 3.8 thousand metres at that stage, and we were going up to 5.5. So, but I was fine after that. So even when we got to Machu Picchu and those sorts of places, it was fine. So,
what are the streets like? Are they really old little streets with your picky cobblestones and small buildings? What are they like?
Yeah, coming from Melbourne, where everything's like 3 years old, it's you know, quite incredible to go to. I mean, I've been all over Europe and I've seen lots of, you know, older cities in Europe and that sort of stuff, but I hadn't seen anything that, you know, these things were built in the 1400s, 1500s, and you know, they build the most incredibly beautiful and incredibly elaborate things in enormous stones on the side of a cliff face that's a kilometre up, and you kind of look at that and you think, you know, if you went to an architect now and said, I want a holiday house up there made of that, they'd go, it's not possible. But, you know, these people just rolled, you know, spent years and years and years rolling hills, rolling sort of boulders up hills, and lots of people were killed in the process, and they're still incredibly beautiful and incredibly intact. So it's just extraordinary. The architecture is amazing. And, yes, Cusco itself, which is kind of the entry city to the Inca Trail, is just, you know, absolutely beautiful, and the people are lovely, I kind of felt like I was at home there. So, you know, if I was Shirley MacLaine and I thought I'd had lots and lots of life,
past life experience,
I would maybe think that I had lived it. Especially when I got to a place called Ollanta Tambo, I really felt like this was somewhere I'd been before, and I clearly haven't been there before, and it's a very tiny town, and you know, just lots of, you know, they just live in dirt huts and pretty simple life. They have guinea pigs on the floor and chickens, and they just pick one up and they put it in a pot and they eat it. And, you know, they don't have the stresses of mobile phones and TV and, you know, what to wear today. And I just really was attracted to that way of life. It took me a while to kind of get rid of my city kind of attitude. When we got to Cusco, we were kind of rushing around a bit, and everyone's walking so slowly. What is with these people? They're walking so slowly. But after a while, we're like, chill. You know, we're on a trip here. These people aren't hurried. Why are we so? And we put our phones down after like a couple of days. We're sort of all texting home and seeing what's happening, getting on the internet. And after about 3 days, we're like, no, don't care what's happening in Melbourne.
I'd be a bit worried down at Balnarring. If your guinea pigs are going missing, if they're just popping off left, right and centre, we know where they're going, don't we?
Yes, we did try a guinea pig, we did, but we tried it in a very fancy restaurant. You know, it was sautéed with, you know, pickled beetroot, and it wasn't just roasted whole and stuck on a stick.
I think that's cheating.
It's definitely cheating, because you couldn't tell what it tastes like, rabbit to me.
Or chicken.
Yeah, rabbit or chicken, another white meat.
Now, Desi, you've had lots of trips as well, and Lisa, mm-hmm. you know, you've also travelled a bunch. How important is the planning in the outcome and the experience of a journey?
Well, I didn't make it to India, but I did a fair amount of planning. In fact, it consumed all of my time. Given that I was coming to three countries, I think India took up the balance of that planning and preparation. It's sort of not a place where you can really wing it, or maybe you can, but I felt that I sort of needed to know where I was going, especially because I was going to hop around to a few different cities. And I know a couple of people there, but the wonderful thing is Indian hospitality, and so one thing always led to another. So my plan was go to Mumbai and stay with Himanshu, my friend from acting school, and no, but you must meet my friend Chandra up in Delhi, and then you must meet my friend Dr. Dune in Dehradun, and you must go here. So that's the trip kind of became very unwieldy after a while. But what I was very impressed and touched by was how many people reached out and were willing to open their home and take me around and care for me. You don't get that much in New York. New York, someone maybe hands you a set of keys and said, good luck, you know.
And what about from your perspective, Lisa? So one of the attractions you mentioned about the tour in South America was that someone else was organising it. Was that appealing for you at that point?
Yeah, it certainly was. And you actually can't hike the Inca Trail now without going with an accredited tour company. Like, I think it used to be open just to the public, a little bit like Cradle Mountain is in Tassie, and you could just kind of turn up. And I think it was actually not ruined, but it was really damaged for a while. And they actually closed it for quite a few months, and they cleaned it up. And even now, sadly, there is still a little bit of rubbish, you know, there's kind of tissues on the side of the path and drink bottles and that sort of thing. So now you can only go with a tour company, and they only have a certain number of people on the trail, which is still quite a lot. There's about 500 people on the trail every day, but we went with a company that left at different times to the others, so we actually only saw one other tour company the whole time, so we didn't see a lot of people, and there was only eight of us.
Did you see people that hadn't put the planning in? Did you see the chaos from disorganised travellers?
No, because because there's various travel companies that you have to go with, although some are not as organised as others, and they might have like 25 people in a walking tour, and that's pretty unwieldy on the Inca Trail, because some of it's pretty, you know, it's just mud, bricks, and it's, you know, it's not easy to traverse some of it. So there was only eight of us, so, you know, you're camping, you're in tents, so, 25 people in tents is pretty... can be pretty chaotic and disorganized. So, you know, my advice would be to pick a company that only takes 8 to 10 people and leaves at certain times of the day where you're not all leaving with hundreds of other people at the same time.
And Lisa, what sort of preparation did you have to put into place in terms of your physical fitness and stamina?
Yeah, you definitely have to do some training. You can't just rock up and expect to do it, because for anyone who is familiar with the 1,000 steps up in the Dandenongs, which is a lot of people go there to train, it's basically 1,000 steps straight up and 1,000 steps, and it's higgledy-piggledy steps. It's like there's a couple of days where it's like doing that for 8 hours straight. Like, you're literally just walking up uneven steps at altitude, breathless, with a backpack on for 8 hours. Mm. And then the next day you're walking down those steps and your legs are aching and you're out of breath. And actually going down was harder than going up. So. Mm.
And also, Lisa, I'd imagine that the foods that you take would have to be high protein, like lots of nuts and things like that. Or?
Yeah, the company provides that for you. So you're having a bit of pasta in the morning. You're actually not that hungry, as surprisingly. Mm. So, yeah, you have snacks during the day. They give you chocolate and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you can't. I wouldn't suggest you turn up without probably at least 3 or 4 months of training and, you know, a lot of stair training, a lot of hiking, and you know, we can't really train for altitude in Australia. It's really hard, so you just have to sort of train for endurance rather than. And you know, when you know that you're gonna you start out in the morning at 7 and you think, well, I'm going to be walking till 6, you just accept it. You don't kind of just go get to midday and go, I can't go any further, because there's no other way. They can't helicopter you out. You just have to keep going. So. Oh,
and Lisa, ¿hablas español?
Not really, a little. I spent a lot of time in Spain 20 years ago, and I kind of could understand what people were saying, but I couldn't respond. Mm-hmm. I could understand taxi drivers, and the same when I got to Buenos Aires, I could kind of understand what people were saying, but I couldn't really have a conversation. So only a little.
Now, Lisa, Daniel and Desi, thanks very much for joining us on Detours Day. You've been listening to Desi, who has a film screening this Saturday.
That you must all go and see.
And the name, of course, is...
Back to Life.
Back to Life.
And it's in BoobTube, the Girl Shorts package.
2:30 next Saturday at the Queer Film Festival.
Yeah, 2:00.
And we've had Lisa Daniel, thank you for joining us, the director of the Queer Film Festival.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be back, won't we, with Macca and the crew on Detours here on Saturday at 12 noon.
And it's weekend.
Bye-bye.
Award-winning radio serving our community. Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.